bursting for it is Isaac Bruce. And Isaac Bruce threads his way for a touchdown.
Cooper Kupp breaks away. Touchdown Rams.
Fires Aaron Donald again.
Inside the 20. He is gone. Touchdown.
Hello and welcome to Los Angeles Rams UK podcast. Episode 67, would you believe? Joining me today are Chris. Evening, Chris.
Hi, Tony. Good evening. Oh. Thanks for having me.
It's very good to have you back, sir. How are you?
Very well indeed. Very happy with the 5-game winning streak, so that's all that really matters.
Oh, I can't believe you've broken my thunder already, Chris. I was leaving that till any other business, but very good to have you all back on board. And we also have John. How are you, John?
Good evening, Tony. Happy New Year. How are you doing?
Happy New Year to you, sir, and Happy New Year to our listeners, obviously. Yeah, I'm very well indeed, thank you. Yourself?
Yeah, can't complain. Rams have started 2022 with a win, so I'm happy.
Well, let's get straight into this then, the Ravens game, John. How many heart attacks did you have?
Luckily, none, but I've got to say my asthma was maybe playing up a wee bit towards the end. You know, I suppose you can say in one hand, a win's a win, but like, that was close. And just when we failed that 2-point conversion, my head and my hands, like, that's it. That's what it's going to cost us. But, you know, like, coming out of it felt like it was a playoff victory more than anything. Like, there was that sense of relief, but there was just, like, so much joy. Like, oh my God, we won, because I didn't, like, a few weeks back, I had us down as losing to the Ravens, so I know they were hit with, you know, some kind of injuries and whatnot. Lamar Jackson wasn't playing, but you got to beat the team in front of you. So well played to the team as a whole to get the victory.
Very much indeed, yes. And Chris, how was it for you?
Well, let's just say I'm glad I've installed the TV in the toilet. you know, my favourite armchair has been replaced. Let's just say that. But I found it a really odd game to watch. You know, from the Ramsey rap thing at the start to...
Yeah,
but the defense towards in the second half seemed to be laughing and having fun, and there was all sorts of stuff going on. Obviously, as John said, you know, Lamar wasn't playing. Huntley played really well, I thought, considering the experience he has, and I just couldn't figure out really what was happening. I liked the score towards the end, obviously the last 5 minutes, but I just found it a really different watch from what we're used to watching the Rams.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're fairly used to these slow starts now this season. That doesn't seem to have gone away at all. But I think the way that the defence wrapped up that first drive from the Ravens was very competent and set a very good tone for us. But then for us to come back from that excellent defensive performance with that missed field goal, and I've just noted, actually, it was 68 yards. And thinking back to my conversation with the UK Ravens podcast last week, they were very taken with Justin Tucker, who has a season long of 66. Part of me thinks that Sean McVay and Matt Gay were trying to put one over on Tucker. What do you think to that, Chris?
It wouldn't surprise me. I think McVay's that kind of guy. I think he likes to put a show on.
Yeah.
Decision making is often called into question, but I think if it comes off, it's great. And he quite often he does put that show on, and his record proves it. So I wouldn't, you know, I probably agree with you, Tony. I think he's been trying to put one over on them.
Yeah, I mean, especially I mean, both of us were at that 2019 debacle at the Coliseum, which was a great occasion, but a very disappointing game. And John, what did you think about that first quarter where our defence seemed to be on top of the game, but we just didn't seem to get it together on the offence?
It just goes back to, like, the, you know, the frustration we've had all season that we are slow starters. It's one of the ones, you know, it's kind of hit or miss whether we're going to kind of, like, drive late in the game as we did this weekend. The thing for me was I felt, especially in the first half as a whole, was that it could have been potentially one of those games where we can drive up the field all we want, but we're not going to put it in the end zone. You know, one of those ones, it's like we just can't put it away, and it's just going to be field goal, field goal, field goal. But, you know, as the game got on, you know, kind of, obviously, especially in the second half, like, that obviously wasn't the case. as we Morris kind of like flipped the score. It was like 13-7 at half, and then we flipped obviously 13-6 in the second half. But as a whole, like I really felt for Matt Gay missing the field goal. I think that's only his fourth of the season, if I'm right. But I mean, like you guys are saying, it was probably just to kind of get one over on, you know, the Ravens and Tucker. You know, because Tucker's regarded as like, you know, a great kicker, and he is. Like, yeah. You know, to hit from like 66 yards is, you know, it's quite impressive as it is. But there was one, was a couple of weeks ago, where we'd said that, you know, with the height the ball was when Gay, you know, made the kick, it probably could have went for over 70. So it's one of those ones that Matt Gay probably has the leg with him, and it was just one of those ones. Like, it was just unlucky. And I feel sorry for the guy because he's had a fantastic season for us.
Yeah, and I think it's only the second field goal he's missed this season, you know, because statistically he was the best kicker in the NFL. Yeah, I've just checked, actually. He's missed one at 40, the 49 range, and one in the 50-plus range all season. So
that's impressive.
It is, and you know, I think we've discussed this before, that we have found our kicker here. So, you know, missing that field goal, I didn't realize until after the game that it was at 68 yards. So in that respect, it's understandable that he did miss, because it was a fair stretch. But you know, in the first half, those back-to-back interceptions from Matthew Stafford, John.
Yeah,
how frustrating was that?
Well, the first one obviously was more frustrating because it was a pick six, you know, off an intended pass to Higby. But like the second one actually, like, is probably even like, I think it's when you see the replay and you realise just how open Van Jefferson was right in front of him. It brings up the question: can't you see him? Can you not see the guy right in front of you there? Stafford's got, he's threw into triple coverage for starters, yeah. And then it was underthrown. It was never going to get. I did notice that Beckham, you know, essentially punched the guy in the backside to ground him. I don't know how he got away with that, because he did hit him. He didn't like push him down or whatever to or tag him. He basically punched him. So I'm surprised he got away with that. But it's one of the things like Stafford seems to do. He seems to always look for a Hollywood pass, as if he feels like he has to. And there has been a few times where it's resulted in an underthrow that's, you know, in a pick. It was, like I said, it was nowhere near Beckham. And with Jefferson, like, you know, essentially wide open for the first down. You know, the thing is, I'm pretty sure that the route that Jefferson ran is, you know, he came across Stafford's line of sight. So surely, you know, like, I could only imagine, like, if you look, he's looking downfield at Beckham, knowing that's where he's going, that's option A. Surely he can see Jefferson coming across his line of sight. And, you know, that would, I don't know if maybe it's just that focused in, but for me, my eyes would then be drawn, well, he's free, get it to him, you know, change the play, you know, make the adjustment. There's the first down, wide open. He'll make the catch, get the first down, and he'll make a gain on it as well. So, but like I said, there's been quite a few passes where he's done that, and it's resulted in a pick. But I think I've seen that that's his fourth pick six of the season now.
Wow. Chris, do you want to come in there?
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I think I said this the last time I was on before, ominously. We played the 49ers the first time this season. I think he's hurt. I think he's playing hurt. I think he's banged up. I think John made a good point. You know, the Hollywood pass for the Rams is the Hollywood pass, because, you know, the Hollywood's team, there's all the media and the pressure, and it's very different to Detroit. And I think, like McVay, he's trying to put a show on. I think in Detroit he would have looked differently. But potentially on the other side of the coin is he's looking around him and thinking, I can afford to make a few mistakes here, and I've got enough talent on this team to come back and you know, claw the victory out. And he had his pick six, he had his interceptions, he had his sack fumble as well, which he almost got away from. You can't blame him for trying that. And I just think he's grown, he's injured, he's still running the offense. He, you know, one thing in his defense is that game's moving so fast. He would have looked at that zone, that space that Jefferson was in, running into, and he wouldn't have seen it. Jefferson maybe appears after he's checked in on that zone. So, you know, he's not a fool. These guys do this every day in practice. He's made a decision in a split second, and it's been a poor one. But I've seen a lot of passes I think are getting away from him. I think a healthier Matt Stafford would be a little bit more accurate, because some of the passes he's made have been phenomenal. He's definitely capable of hitting these really tight slots. But when he gets it wrong, it's went horribly wrong. And that was the pick six was a great example of that. His other one was another good example of when it goes really, really badly wrong on his judgment. But I think we'll see a better quarterback in this season. And I'm happy he's in a situation in a team with enough talent to claw back. But I understand why people are screaming. And I was screaming myself.
I mean, the Discord on Sunday night, there was about 20 of us in there, and you could feel the anxiety coming through the screen of people who were really frustrated about the way that the play was going, and that we should have been beating Baltimore before we actually did in the fourth quarter, started doing so in the fourth quarter. But one of the things that I was thinking was, the thought process of Matthew Stafford, does he still think that he needs to carry the team? I know he's come from the Detroit Lions, where he didn't have as much talent around him. But how hard is it after, 10, 11 seasons to actually change that mentality that he has to be the linchpin for this and he has to make it work, when I think us fans have become a bit more used to Sean McVay and his scheme and the amount of talent that we've been able to draw into the team, that our game plan doesn't rest on one player anymore. But do you think that might be part of the mentality, Chris?
Yeah, I do. I think it's a big thing. I think his entire experience has been in Detroit up until he joined LA at the start of this year. So his mindset, and as players goes, he's quite old. He probably set in his ways, and he's got a mentality that's in a very set way of operating. And I can see, if you've played the game, you understand how quick things happen. And I can see possibly his instant reactions aren't what they should be to satisfy the LA crowd base. But given where he's come from and the way he's been formed and his decision-making has been formed all those years in Detroit, I think it makes good sense. That's why I think next year we'll see a different player, probably some of the same mistakes, but someone who will make less mistakes.
Yeah. John, your thoughts?
Just pretty much agree with what Chris is saying. I think when Matthew Stafford comes back next year, it'll be a totally different quarterback. I think it's one of those ones, he's still carrying, a lot of the scars from his time in Detroit. It's just totally ingrained in him. It's something it must be difficult for him to let go that I've got to carry the team. And I think as the seasons went on, I have noticed that even with the picks, early in the season he'd make the picks and then it would just seem to be totally in disarray. I think it was like the Cardinals game at SoFi. His passing was just so erratic at one point in the game. Whereas as the seasons got on, it's almost as if he's now learned that, like Chris said, with personnel around him, he realises that I can make mistakes. I shouldn't be making them, but if I make them, I've got the personnel to come back from this. So I think he's matured a bit more in terms of he can just dust himself off, go back out and keep carrying on, keep moving forward. So I feel like from my point of view, I've seen him improve over the season like that. And I think when he comes back next season, it'll be a totally different quarterback. He'll be used to our schemes, our systems, everything we've got going on offense. He'll be used to what each player's capable of and what their strengths and weaknesses are. And I think he'll be a lot stronger next season for us.
Excellent. No, that sounds good to me. And obviously we had that pick six in the first quarter, and we had a brace of field goals from the Ravens in the second quarter. But in between those field goals, we had that Cooper Kupp touchdown, 18 yards after the interception. Chris?
Sorry, I was just going to say, beautiful, absolutely beautiful.
it was quite delicious.
Yeah, the story just keeps going, and then you see when you get it together, it's just beautiful to watch. And that's his talent coming through. Talking about Kupp and all his yards and the Triple Crown and his ability, and all of that comes. There's another guy throwing the ball to him, and that's Stafford. And, that says as much as Stafford's thrown his pick sixes and his interception ratio has been poor the second half of the season. We've been 5-3 instead of 7-1 for the last eight games, we've turned in a 5-3 record. One of those victories was against the Jags, but yeah, I think you have to remember that, that Stafford's actually got a lot of good things going for him as well. And you see that in Cup.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. John, that, how good was that touchdown for you?
Oh, it was great, but I think, you know, just overlooking the pick by Jordan Fuller, that helped set it up. It was underthrown by Hunlett, but it was a great read by Fuller, and he picked up a decent return after the catch.
He did.
So it did set us up really well for Cup to then, you know, put it in the end zone for us.
Excellent. And obviously we received the ball in the second half, as we expected to. And on our first drive, we had that fumble that you've already mentioned, Chris, which, you know, I was expecting, hoping, expecting that that would be our go-ahead score, that we would get a touchdown on that drive coming out of the second half and then sort of drive on to victory. Was that your thought process as well, John? Or were you a bit more pessimistic than I?
Well, on that drive, it did feel like we were heading for the end zone, so it was really disappointing. It just, like, Stafford did his best to try and avoid the sack. I can't really criticise him for fumbling it. You know, there's been some poor blocking there on the line that's allowed, you know, the Ravens guy to come through in a central attempt to sack him. You know, the ball got stripped. Stafford did what he could. It's unfortunate to take a turnover and kind of, like, take sail at the wind out of our sails, so to speak, on that drive. But I did think we were heading for another score.
Mm-hmm. Chris, was you on a similar frame of mind?
Yeah, just exactly as John says. You know, I thought, here we go, we're getting it together. We're looking okay, and then we have a debacle, as I would like to call it, and suddenly the wind's out your sails. But I think John made a point earlier. And one of the last questions, I think, having watched that, I think it had it been Jared Goff, as much as I was a fan of Goff in the horns, I think the Goff would have crumbled a wee bit between the ears in those situations. And it was good. It really, I think, showed the heart of the team from that point onwards, how they were set up, how the mentality was beginning to play out when we turned things around and started with a lot of positives together.
Yeah, and you know, the Ravens came back from recovering that fumble and actually went on a 15-play drive, which only resulted in a 46-yard field goal. So although it was a long drive and they were actually making some short yardage, it felt good that we was able to restrict them to just those 3 points, Chris.
Yeah, Ravens didn't score a touchdown all day, really. You pick six, apart from that, they've nothing.
Yep.
And yep. The Rams' defense had a few things going wrong. And even with that, and Hunley playing really well, I thought the Rams' defense, the bit old bend but don't break, was really shown for them.
Yep. So that field goal was actually followed by an exchange of really short plays, really, between the Rams and the Ravens. But then we came up with eight plays that led to the Sonny Michel touchdown, just a 1 yard push through to the touchline, and that was great. That was Sonny Michel at his best, I think. You know, and he's been playing well for half a dozen games or so, and I think he deserves a lot of plaudits for actually dragging the team along with him, Chris.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's come in and he's been a questionable trade, given we had Akers and Henderson, and he's just proven his worth. He's come in much like Anderson a few years ago when we got to the Super Bowl, and Gurley was injured, and he runs a bit like Anderson, a little bit of a smaller frame, but he's a bulldozer. You know, he's like a cannonball going through that line, and he's playing for a new contract or playing to show, you know, try and show the league he's something that they think he's not. I'm not sure, but the guy's playing with an energy and a determination that you don't often see in a situation that's fairly alien to him, because, again, he doesn't know the full offense. He's only been in since preseason. You know, he's not embedded in the offense. He doesn't have 2 or 3 years under his belt, but he's playing like he's been there 5 and 6.
Yeah, and I think he's proving to be that veteran signing that we needed, especially when we lost Cam Akers so early, well, before the season started. And you know, he's been able to carry that run offense for us. So I'm fairly pleased for him. And you know, I'm doubtful whether he'll get a contract with the Rams, but I'm fairly certain he'll get a decent contract somewhere next season. John, how was that touchdown for you, and how did that feel as though the Rams were actually gaining some of the momentum back, maybe?
Yeah, it did feel like in the kind of build up to this drive, it did kind of start to become apparent that it didn't seem like the Ravens were going to be capable of essentially, I would say, actually beating us. They may be able to, you know, kick the ball between the posts, but I didn't feel like the Ravens were going to be able to actually beat us. So it was going to come down to us, you know, putting in the end zone. So it was a bit of a relief, but it was great. Especially for Michelle, who over the course of the season I've become more and more of a fan of him. He's been ever, you know, present for us when he's been asked to step up. He's been so reliable. And, you know, like Chris said, when we tried to bring him in, it was kind of questionable, do we really need this guy? You know, and, you know, I'm so glad we've got him, to be honest. Because, you know, I'm not talking him down when I say it, but it would be Jake Funk who would be, you know, taking every carry right now. So he's been great for us. But I think, you know, there was one great play actually in the build-up on this drive, and that was a screen pass to Cup. That the footwork from him, followed by a spin move that took us to first and goal, was just, again, incredible. Cup showcasing his talents. And that was the pass that took Cup above Isaac Bruce in the all-time rankings. So it took Cup as now the number one wide receiver, the most receiving yards for the Rams.
In a season?
Yes, in a season, yes. Yeah. Not overall, obviously. He's still got a long way to go in that, I guess.
He's got quite a while to go for that. Yes. But yeah, that it was a great drive, and it did feel inevitable. And I think with that touchdown from Sonny Michel, it started to feel as though the momentum was really behind the Rams, and that all we had to do really was put a single stop to the Ravens, and then we could drive on and just win the game. And you know, the Ravens came back with a 34-yard field goal, which felt great, and we drove down and we came up with that Odell Beckham Jr. touchdown just on the inside the pylon. And I was torn at the time about whether to go for 2 points. I think I was on the side of yes. But where were you with that, John?
I saw the logic in a sense in doing it, because, you know, at worst it would kind of like prevent the Ravens from beating us, I guess. You know, so I understand the need to go for two, and I probably would have done the same, given if I was asked. I wouldn't have wanted to play it safe, just because all they would have to do is get into range with Tucker, which, like I said at the start, because we failed the conversion, then, you know, it was, you know, squeaky bum time, because all they have to do is get in range and there's a good chance he's going to, you know, kick it for the win.
Yep. Chris?
Yeah, totally the same. It made no difference whether they got the field goal or not. They had to go for two, try and secure the outcome, and, you know, at least they tried. But it was a no-brainer. They had to do it.
Yeah.
Particularly, as John said, with Tucker, with that guy who's proven, you know, he can win games from distance. You can't take the chance. So yeah, it was a no-brainer. Easy decision.
Yeah. Okay. And obviously the Ravens got the ball back with about less than a minute left to play, I think, wasn't there? And I think the way the defense played that drive was just phenomenal. They were so determined not to give them an inch, and it was just astounding the way that Aaron Donald, right at the end, and the Ravens players started that desperate move. Yep. of the lateral passes, and you just saw Aaron Donald come from behind and just completely flatten the play and go, "We're not having that. We're going to finish the game." And that was just great, wasn't it, Chris?
Yeah, he kept flying in there from, as you watched it on the screen, from the right-hand side, so from where the quarterback in the pocket would have been. And I don't think I've ever seen Donald coming downfield and making hits like that. Sure, I've seen him jump on the back of a couple of running backs, but not like that. That was a man possessed coming to put an end to the nonsense. That was like when your father kicks the door open to the room and tells you, go to bed. It's like, right, that's it, enough. Just stop. This game's over, I'm having that. You're right, it was 57 seconds left when they got the ball, and they were trying certainly to make something happen.
Oh, definitely. And, you know, there was that voice at the back of your head saying, if they get within field goal range, we're done. If they get within field goal range, we're done. And it was just great to see how competent our defence was, John.
Yeah, just going back to Aaron Donald, you know, with the play that essentially ended the game. You know, it was reminiscent of when we were in Arizona a few weeks back and did the exact same thing where he came out of nowhere. And similar to that play where, you know, he sacked Murray, Donald, he started the play, started going through, his role within that play, kind of stopped and then just came running out of nowhere and boom. So it was great. I was just waiting for him to get up and start waving at the Ravens fans, go home. That's over. I was just waiting for that. But you know, as a whole, especially as the kind of game kind of got more, it got further on, the defense as a whole have really turned around. You know, since the Packers game, I would say something has changed, and a lot of the guys in defense are now starting to kind of step up and click. You know, whatnot. I mean, Von Miller had. I think a sack and a half. Floyd was involved in quite a lot of kind of pressures and sacks. Aaron Donald had a sack as well. Reader had a sack as well, which was great play by him, which kind of was aided by a lot of pressure that was put on Gaines, who has been, you know, phenomenal since he came in. He's been absolutely great and a great replacement for Sebastian Joseph Day being out. So as a whole, the defence really kind of seemed like they've properly gelled. It's just that Ramsey rap altercation that had me a wee bit concerned at the start of the game. But from what I've seen from McVay, he kind of laughed off and just said to the, I think it was the other day, the press conference, he just laughed off and said, have you not got brothers? And just said, it was a miscommunication. They've moved on.
That's great that they feel they can do that with each other. Hopefully there's no animosity down the line with that, but it's great that they feel they can be able to reprimand each other and say, we've got to do better. And it did look really off when we first saw it on screen, but it's nothing that you really wouldn't expect from Jalen Ramsey. And I think the only thing we haven't really covered, guys, is the special teams. And I think Powell put in a decent performance this game. John?
Yeah, it did all right, but I noticed that the Ravens were doing their best to make sure he couldn't return it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after he obviously had that, you know, punt return last week for the touchdown, that they just wanted to make sure he couldn't either catch it or he couldn't return it. But I would say that, you know, he looks to be a return guy. I just wish that we would stop putting Cooper Kupp out there, as we're still doing.
It gives you palpitations, doesn't it,
yes,
John?
Yes, absolutely. That I'm more likely to have a heart attack from Cooper Kupp returning anything than anything else.
Chris, anything to say on the special teams at all?
It might just be me, but it certainly felt like for the last three or four seasons, we didn't have a special teams play. There wasn't a flag on. There was always a push in the back, an illegal block, something going on. We've been pretty clean. And I think, and somebody might correct us, or one of you guys might correct me, but I don't think we had any flags on special teams this weekend.
I don't think there was. I mean, there were four penalties for the Rams and four for the Ravens, but I don't recall them being on our special teams at all.
No, I remember Big Wick got one.
He did.
Which I was shocked at. But no, I don't think. And I think we've been fairly clean on special teams in the last couple of games, which is nice. So no, that would be my only comment. And I think Powell is a guy who's just come in under the radar.
Yeah.
And he's obviously showing it against the Vikings with his return. And the last time I was on, I was talking about how long it had been since Fero Cooper had taken that return back at the Coliseum. And prior to that, it was Tavon Austin a couple of years before. So we've not had much to shout about on special teams. But, you know, apart from Johnny Hecker throwing passes and fake punts and fake kicks and all that kind of stuff. But we've not had much on the actual straight-ahead return game. And I think Powell has the size and the moves and the speed. He's not Deion Sanders, but he's definitely an upgrade. And as John says, get Cooper Kupp out of there. What is he doing? You know, and I get nervous when I see him cutting inside and taking on the D end on a block as well. It's like, Jesus, you know, we've got to keep this guy catching the ball and not smashing his hands up against D ends and linebackers.
Definitely.
But so it's the way he wants to play, so I guess you can't control that. So
any final thoughts on the game in general after that 2019 win that takes us to 12-4, Chris?
Oh, well, having been in the Coliseum, the last time the Rams were shut out in the first half, it was very satisfying to watch the revenge.
Yes.
As nail-biting as it was, I was hoping we would put 40 past them and beat them by a huge margin and rub it in. But actually, winning it in the manner we did, close to the end, was very satisfying. So no, that's all. Just it put to bed a few demons I had from the last game against the Baltimore Ravens at the Coliseum.
Thanks. Yes, it did for myself as well. So, John, any final thoughts?
Yeah, just a couple of things. My usual gripe that Corbett's hand signal prior to the snap returned.
Did
against the Ravens. Yes, he didn't do it the whole game, but there was quite a few times in the first half he was doing it, and I hate it because it gives away the snap count. So I don't know why it's still there. I don't know if they're trying to catch people or whatnot now. They're trying to utilise it that way, but it's just a bugbear of mine that, you know, I feel like it just shows to the defence when you're going to snap the ball. And the other thing I picked up on was that whilst their defence, you know, I feel stepped up in recent weeks, it just doesn't look like if we come across a scrambling quarterback, we can contain them as much, because Huntley was able to, you know, scramble successfully quite a few times for a few games. Not massive games, but, you know, average games. So it's one of those ones, like, I think, you know, I'd like to see him tighten up in that. That's the only, what I would say, negative thing I came out of the game saying I wasn't happy with in terms of performance, because, especially in the second half, Huntley did manage to scramble quite a few times to pick up, like, well, as I said, might not be massive gains, but I don't like seeing a quarterback scramble over the line of scrimmage, put it that way.
To be fair, John, Huntley was putting up 9 yards every time he tried to scramble. Really? On average, so it's that's not good enough from our defense.
I suppose it could have been worse. It could have been Lamar Jackson, who would have been the running game for the Ravens.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, Devontae Freeman probably wouldn't have got a carry, and Jackson would have ran it himself. So I suppose it could have been worse.
Well, I think that pretty much wraps up the game for us. So Tom was going to do a bit of an analysis for us on Matthew Stafford and the current situation with his interceptions this season. Tom, what are your thoughts?
Thanks, Tony. For the first 8 weeks of the season, Matthew Stafford only had 4 turnovers. These were 4 interceptions, and there was never more than one thrown in any game. In the second half of the season, starting with the Week 9 game against the Tennessee Titans, Matthew Stafford has had 13 turnovers, 11 interceptions, and 2 lost fumbles. Of the 11 interceptions, 4 have been returned for touchdowns. I have taken a look at the 11 interceptions from the second half of the season to see if there is something wrong with Matthew Stafford's play that has caused these, or if there are other issues that have led to these picks. Before I do that, though, I must stress that these interceptions have come in 2-3 game bursts, with 5 coming against Tennessee, San Francisco and Green Bay, and 6 coming against Seattle, Minnesota and Baltimore. But in the middle of these 3 game bursts, there's been 2 good games against Arizona and Jacksonville, where Matthew Stafford has 3 touchdowns and no turnovers at all. While the 11 interceptions all happen in different games and in different game circumstances, some are very similar in nature and can be grouped together in the way that they have occurred. There are 2 interceptions which I think are fair to say are Stafford's fault. Against the Titans, when he was being sacked in the end zone, which would have been a safety, he just threw the ball away randomly and it was picked off by linebacker David Long and almost returned for a touchdown. The Titans ended up scoring on the next play. I think in that situation it certainly would have been better to even take the safety in the end zone, rather than give them the opportunity to score a touchdown right away. Against Minnesota, on 3rd and 6 deep in his own territory, Stafford tried to make a play out of nothing, forced the ball to Sony Michel on the sideline, but underthrew it, and it ended up being picked up by Anthony Barr. In that situation, taking the sack or throwing the ball away and punting away would have been certainly better than giving up the 3 points on the next drive to the Vikings in what was a close game at the time. 4 of the interceptions have come on deep pass attempts. These have been against San Francisco, Seattle, Minnesota and Baltimore. These are quite similar in nature in that they have been thrown into double or triple coverage with no real chance of being completed. I'm not certain though if this is all on Matthew Stafford. He may have been trying to make a big play when it wasn't really there. However, it could also be a directive from Sean McVay to throw deep anyway to keep the defence honest. These four deep interceptions were all come early in the games in question, which makes me think these are less likely forced attempts from Matthew Stafford to have a big play, but more a directive from Sean McVay to keep the defence honest. I still would have preferred to see them pick up the first down on underneath throws than force a ball into double or triple coverage, however. Three of the interceptions came from great defensive plays, rather than anything I think Matthew Stafford did wrong. Unfortunately, these all ended up being pick sixes. These are the Kevin Byard pick six from Tennessee, the Rasul Douglas pick six against Green Bay, and the Chuck Clark pick six against Baltimore. These all seem to be plays where the defense seemed to know what was coming, and I'm not sure whether this was anything Matthew Stafford telegraphed, or whether this was something that the defensive player has seen from the film. It may be more of a Sean McVay problem on his play calling, where it's something that was quite predictable. For example, Byard seemed to know exactly where Robert Woods was running on his route route when he jumped ahead of it and took it back for a touchdown. And the same with Chuck Clark. I've heard that talk of there being a wrong route run by a Rams player, but Clark seemed to know exactly where the ball was going on the pass to Tyler Higbee, jumped it and took it back for a touchdown with ease. The two interceptions I've not talked about so far are quite different from the others. The first, the pick six against San Francisco, that came off Tyler Higbee's hands on an attempted tight end screen. You could argue that Matthew Stafford threw that ball slightly too far in front of Tyler Higbee so he had to reach for it, but that's still no excuse for the drop pass ended up in Jimmy Smith's hands and then being returned for a touchdown. The other was against Minnesota, where he attempted again to throw to Tyler Higbee, but this time in what looked like triple coverage, but the ball ended up being tipped and falling into the hands of Anthony Barr. I don't think the ball being tipped excuses Matthew Stafford here, because he still attempted to essentially throw through the defender that was rushing straight at him, rather than, say, throwing to Cooper Kupp on the right side. Having looked at these 11 interceptions from the second half of the season, there's only a few that I think can solely be pinned on Matthew Stafford, and I certainly don't think his play would be a concern going into the playoffs. The main thing to note about the two three-game stretches of interceptions in the second half of the season is that they came against very different groups of teams. The second stretch against Seattle, Minnesota and Baltimore came against three teams that are unlikely to make the playoffs, and the Rams were able to overcome Matthew Stafford's turnovers to win those games. However, earlier in the year, on the first three-game stretch, these came against the Tennessee Titans, the San Francisco 49ers and the Green Bay Packers, three teams that are likely to make the playoffs. All of those three games ended with the Rams unable to overcome the turnovers and losing the game. This stresses how important turnovers are for the playoffs. I'd like to see the Rams treat this Week 18 game against San Francisco as a playoff game, which it almost is with the NFC West on the line and the number 2 seed in the NFC, and the chance to knock the Niners out of the playoffs. If the Rams can play a clean game of football with no turnovers, it will give the team, and especially the fans, confidence going into the playoffs so that they can make a long run to the Super Bowl.
That was great, Tom. Thanks for that. I'm sure we'll be revisiting this conversation in the future. Chris, heard anything from the player updates all this week?
No, I've been looking. I've been keeping a wee eye on things. The only thing that's really stood out was the Cooper Kupp stuff on the 17 versus 16 game seasons and the records that go with them. And obviously the COVID situation affecting some teams, and I see Burrow's out. Burrow's not going to play week 17. But no, around the Rams, no, I haven't picked up much.
No, I mean, there's the injury to Gaines. He was holding his hand, wasn't he, during the game. So, I mean, hopefully he makes a recovery for the Niners game this coming weekend. John, have you heard or seen anything of note?
I'd seen it. Nick Scott had broken his thumb against the Ravens, but he's expected just to wrap up and play through it. To be honest, and McVay's said that he's anticipating that Cam Akers will see some form of game time this week, but he's not saying how much. I think he'll maybe get a run out.
Okay, I mean, that would make sense to give him a couple of plays or a couple of downs, just to get his eye and get used to being on the field again with his teammates in preparation for hopefully being a bit more of a weapon during the playoffs, which brings us to the playoff picture. So at the moment, I believe we would face, as the second seed, we would face the Philadelphia Eagles, which is much more preferable than facing the 49ers on back-to-back weeks. But John, I think you had something to say on the playoff picture.
Yeah, so on Discord server, someone had shared, you know, that all the permutations there can be in AFC. I did say the AFC side of it, which I'll come back to. So just like to run through, there are 9 possible scenarios for the Rams, 4 of which are for us for being the second seed, 2 for third, 1 for fourth, and there are 2 for fifth. So this week, if we win and New Orleans win, we'll host the Saints. If we win, Atlanta and Philly win, we host the 49ers, which we probably don't want. If we win, Atlanta and Dallas win, we host the Eagles. If we lose, Seattle win, Carolina wins, and Philly wins, we host the Eagles. And that will have us as the second seed. As the third seed, basically we host the 49ers regardless, which is off the back of either we lose, Seattle win, Tampa Bay win, and Philly win, or if Carolina and Dallas win. So basically, any of those wins will face the 49ers. And for the fourth seed, it would see us play the Cardinals at SoFi, which is a result of us losing, Seattle winning, Tampa Bay winning, and Dallas winning. And then the only way where you'll have to travel away anywhere, which will be to Dallas, is if we lose, Arizona win, and either, well, I suppose Tampa Bay and Carolina are playing each other. So as long as that game doesn't end up in a tie, we go to Dallas as number 5. But in terms of overall, like, all we've got to really do is just go out and win. We win this week, we're number 2 regardless of what anyone else does.
And I mean, you must have had all that written down in front of you. I hope you haven't learned all that by rote, John.
No, of course, that's all from memory. It's not written down on my screen whatsoever.
And it does feel good that we've got the fate of the playoffs in our own hands, really. And it feels great to be sitting as the second seed, ready to clinch, hopefully, the division and that home field advantage, at least in the wild card round. Any preferences from you, Chris? Who do you not want to face?
Well, I think John touched on it there. We really don't want to see the Niners at all. Whether it's, you know, just because of the time of year or the recent results or the fact that they're a hoodoo team, as you might call it, really don't want to see them. I was looking at, so I didn't do as much research as John. I was quite lazy. I look at Turf Show times mostly for quick pickups on info. And they've rated the Saints at a 39% chance of being our opponent. Yeah, the Cowboys at 21%, Eagles at 20%, the Niners at 18%, and the Cardinals at 2%. So I think the opposite of your question, I think the people would really like to see would be the Saints. But the permutations are, as John said, numerous and varied. So it's a crapshoot at the moment. It's a crapshoot.
I mean, I did have a look at the Eagles, actually, and they feel very much like quite similar to the Ravens in their
Jalen Hurts worries me. Sorry to cut over you, but yeah, John made a point about running quarterbacks, and I'm worried about Jalen Hurts.
Yeah, I mean, that was my concern as well, that we've not done. I mean, obviously, we face Kyler Murray twice a year, but we never seem to do particularly well at containing him, even if we do often win. And it was quite a concern facing the Eagles as like an unknown quantity. But I'm exactly like you, Chris. I do not want to face the Niners back-to-back, even if we completely trounce them this coming Sunday. And that would just be too much. I'd rather face anybody else than the Niners. It feels as though, I mean, even the Saints, would that feel, do you think the Saints fans and the team actually would feel that was a bit of a revenge mission after the NFC Championship game down in New Orleans, Chris?
Yeah, I think they would probably like to see it that way, but I think on paper, if you look at the teams, the Saints don't worry me at all. I'm not sure that, not to be disrespectful to Saint Nation or whatever they call themselves, but I just don't see it. Obviously, the fans would be very keen to make amends for that. You know, that crucial play on that towards the end of the game when we got to the Super Bowl. But I think we could brush past them quite easy if we show up.
Okay.
Although they have beaten Tampa Bay quite convincingly. So maybe there's more that I haven't been aware of.
Okay. John, anybody you don't fancy facing? Or who do you not fancy facing in the playoffs?
49ers, it's a no-brainer. I probably would also say I wouldn't like to travel to Dallas either. I think they're a bit of a dark horse this year. Personally, I would prefer to host the Saints. To be honest, I don't think the Aints are up to as much as anyone else. We could probably beat the Eagles, but I would be worried about Hurts, you know, just kind of scrambling against us. The Saints have kind of maybe turned their season around a wee bit, and they'll, you know, I think they'll probably sneak in here. So, I mean, they're the team I probably would like to take in the first round. It's one of those ones we've kind of came up against most of these teams that are in the playoffs, going to be in the playoffs from the NFC. And I think I said a few weeks ago, like, we know that we've came up against them, so we've got an idea how they play and how they set up. So we're kind of not really going in as blind to some of these teams. So, you know, as long as we progress from the wild card rounds, then it's likely, you know, we could probably come up against, you know, like a Tampa Bay, who we, you know, beat at SoFi early in the season. And it's one of the ones we would host them at SoFi as well. Because one of the things that I did say, you know, kind of at the start of the season was, because the Super Bowl is going to be at SoFi, psychologically speaking, you know, the players are going to want to kind of try and progress through the playoffs at SoFi all the way, I would say, keep up the home field advantage and whatnot and get, you know, the crowd on their side. But, well, I guess we'll have to see how the, you know, the games go this week. New Orleans have got Atlanta. Philly and Dallas are playing each other. And I think I said Tampa Bay and Carolina playing each other. So we'll see how it goes, I guess.
Yep, it's all to play for. And obviously Sky here in the UK have picked up the Rams game for coverage. So a lot of Game Pass subscribers not particularly happy. But I think it does put us to a wider audience, which is always good. But we are in that 9:25 kickoff slot, which means a 12:30 finish for us. Sorry, John, was that you, John, wanted to come in?
Yeah, sorry, just when you said about all to play for, it's not really all for to play for if you look at the AFC, because obviously we're on our side of, you know, the conference. Green Bay's obviously got number one up, but like the AFC is so wide open. Like I said, there was 9 possible scenarios for the Rams, but that's 9 possible scenarios, across the whole of the NFC, not just for us. Whereas on the AFC, there's 19 permutations of how the 1-7 seeding can go. And in a good half of them, you know, Tennessee are likely to be there. But when I was looking down the list, the Patriots could potentially be either first or sixth, depending on how the results go. The Bills could be second or seventh, depending on how they go. I thought it was hard trying to sit and look at all our permutations and, you know, what it mean for us trying to work at the AFC. You know, it gave me a migraine. So I just gave up trying to analyse it. So, like, see how that ends up. But, like, I think there'll be more eyes on how the AFC playoff spots are going to kind of be finalised this weekend than there will be on the NFC.
Indeed. Yes, I was just looking at that. I mean, do you think that means that I think that sort of looks like the AFC is being more competitive, even though we're talking a matter of degrees here. But, I mean, to your mind, John, do you think the AFC is stronger than the NFC this season?
I don't think it's necessarily stronger. I'd say it is probably more competitive, and it's not as clear-cut as maybe the NFC is. And not to, you know, put it down, but, we've got, you know, the East with, you know, what are arguably usually some of the poorest teams in the league. You know, like last year we played everybody in, you know, the NFC East and beat them all, you know, with a sweep against them. So it's one of the ones, if you get a schedule where you've got like a good few of them, like you're off to a kind of winner, a flyer, I guess. I think it's just one of those ones that there's probably more competition in the AFC. That doesn't necessarily mean they're stronger or better than the NFC. It just means that, you know, there's more competition, I guess.
Okay. Chris, what do you think? Do you think the AFC is stronger than the NFC this season?
Boy, it's an age-old question, isn't it? It used to be dead easy. NFC was just it. The AFC with the bridesmaids for so long. But I think the nature of the teams are very different. The dynamic through the season changes quite significantly. Like the Patriots are being part of this conversation, whereas at the start of the year, you probably wouldn't have predicted that. So as a conference, I think they have teams that are blown more hot and cold, and therefore it's creating more of a competitive Week 17 situation. Whereas I think the NFC have been a little bit more consistent in the performers, and it's made the situation a little bit easier. But to answer your question directly, I think the NFC is a stronger conference.
Okay. I mean, it certainly looks like an interesting finale to the season, with so many permutations of what could happen on either side of the conferences. But we do have to contend with playing the 49ers at the SoFi to close out the regular season. I'm going to come back to you, Chris. What say you about this time?
Oh, well, I predicted doom the last time we had this situation, and unfortunately, I was accurate. So again, I'm very worried. I'm worried in a lot of ways. The first thing is, obviously, is it going to be Trey Lance or is it going to be Jimmy G? Because that puts some uncertainty in terms of McVay's preparation for the game, how he's going to set his stall out. On the flip side of that, maybe that's a good thing, because we've known it's Jimmy G the last five games, and the last five games have all been defeats. So maybe that's what McVay needs. He maybe needs to think in different directions to get the victory here. But the 49ers are playing well. They're 6-2 in the last eight games.
Okay.
The Rams are 5-3. One of those victories was against the Jaguars. So if you say we're really 4-3 against, you know, successful football teams, sure, we're on a five-game winning streak. But the 49ers are peaking at the right time. They're getting the players back. If you look at guys like Kittle, who's had a really quiet couple of games, I've had him in my fantasy teams and he's been relatively quiet. Trey Lance came in last week and done really well. Okay, it was Houston, but Houston have shown the last six or seven games they've played, they're capable of giving teams, pushing teams certainly to their best, to, you know, forcing teams to beat them instead of beating themselves. So I think it's going to be, let's just say, I might be in the toilet again with the telly. I'm hoping for the victory. I'm hoping McVay can hit. McVay's first three games against the Niners, we beat them by 29-16 and then 2 points. And then his fourth game was a reverse of minus 21. And then it was minus 3, minus 13, minus 8, minus 3. So, and then minus 21 in the first game. So we've had a hard time of it. And I can't see, I can't see why we should be confident of a victory.
No. I mean, looking at the stats for the Niners, I mean, obviously you have Nick Bosa with 15 sacks this season. Seems to be doing pretty well for himself there. You have Debo Samuel with 1,300 yards receiving and George Kittle behind him on 900. And then you have Eli Mitchell with 878 yards on the rushing. And, you know, they seem to have plenty of weapons. It's just getting them all on the field at the same time has been a problem for them. What are your thoughts, John?
First of all, I hope McVay is going to run the goddamn ball this time and run it down the throat, because the last game, you know, you know, Levi's was crying out for a running game from us, and we just abandoned it. We've got to contain Debo Samuel. Absolutely must. I don't care, put Ramsey on him the whole game. Keep an eye on him, because he got, in the last time, I just felt like he just got too much free reign, you know. And it wasn't even necessarily from receiving. It was just like he was able to put, you know, rush with the ball as well. But I'd kind of looked at it from point of view as, we're going into this game, and it's kind of going back to how, I don't know if this is because before the Vikings game, I was sitting watching the documentaries on it, but it reminded me of, you know, back in the 99 season, we came through a spell where we couldn't buy a win against San Francisco, and it didn't matter what the personnel we had out there. I mean, we were the greatest show in turf, and we couldn't buy a win. You know, and there was like footage of the Niners players, you know, mocking us, you know, like, bye-bye, you know, you all go home now, you're here and all that, whatnot. And in that season, we finally were able to turn them over, and it gave the players a boost and a lift, especially guys that had been with the Rams for a good few seasons at that point, you know, like your Isaac Bruce's and whatnot. And it just kind of feels like, to me, this is just my opinion, it's kind of that kind of scenario over again, that it's not to say that the win signifies that we're going to go to any specific place, whatnot, because I'm trying not to get myself. It's more of from a psychological perspective for our players to go into the postseason. We need to show them no mercy on Sunday. I wouldn't say we need to throw the kitchen sink in them because they'll expect that. I would throw, you know, the bath, the shower, the cistern, the sink from the toilet, you know. You know, if you've got a downstairs toilet, whatever, I'll throw it from that as well, because they won't be expecting that. And I think I said that a few weeks ago, you know, maybe go out and, you know, hit them with a, you know, a 2-minute drill. If we've got the first drive, you know, try and hit them, try and knock them off their pace. Don't do what they're going to expect us to do, and don't, like, just do something completely different. And I hope McVay is planning for that, because we win on Sunday, it's going to give our guys such a boost, because it goes back to, you know, no win November, and we were really just, we couldn't buy a win, obviously, but that performance, you know, against them was just really poor, and that's off the back of, you know, bringing Von Miller, you know, and that, and it's more signified to you guys, we've got it together now, we're ready for this, we're peaking at the right time, and that's to derail them, because, you know, as Chris says, the Niners are really peaking at the right time, and I said a while back that this game was the one I was worried the most about, especially if it was going to, well, at the time I said, if it was going to be between one of us who gets in and not. It's not a case of that now. It's a case of the path that we're going to have for ourselves. You know, as I said, when we're number two, we're more likely to stay at home until possibly the NFC Championship game, if we get that far. But for me right now, it's more about giving the guys the psychological boost. And I think, you know, we mentioned about the Ravens game, the guys can, you know, can reprimand each other, they can come together, you know, they can argue with each other, but it doesn't affect their gameplay, they just move on. They've got the passion and the determination there, and I hope that Sunday this is going to be the time where they're just, you know, we're going to let the dogs off the leash, so to speak, and just hopefully go to town and finally turn this mob over.
Oh, John, I love the passion you put into that monologue there. I am ready to run through the brick wall in front of me to get at the 49ers. I want the game in half an hour. I'm ready to go. I'm just ready to go. Chris, what do you think to that?
I feel you, John. I feel you. I'm actually just slipping my game pads on now. It's not my cleats, my old lid. I just need a chin strap somewhere, but I'll play without one.
Fantastic. And looking at the predictions that the team made pre-season, there was only Tom who had us losing this final game of the season. Everybody else had us down for a win, optimistically. What are you going for, Chris?
I think we've had enough adversity. We've had our losing streak. We've had games like Sunday where we were in bad positions and we came back and won it. And I think through the course of learning those lessons, we will surprise the Niners on Sunday. I think we'll win this one quite comfortably.
Excellent. John?
Win at all costs. Simple as that.
Fantastic.
I don't care how we do it, win. Just go out and win it. But like I just said there, when I kind of went off on a tangent, I think I might have blacked out because I don't even remember half of what I said. But I think the guys are ready for this.
Well, there certainly would be if he was leading the pre-game pep talk. So, Chris, I don't know if you've got that direct line to Sean McVay still open, but if you just drop him a line and send him this recording from John, that would be fantastic.
Now, remember, yeah, well, McVay listens to the podcast, because remember when I pointed out Corbett's hand signals, he stopped doing it.
That's
McVay's
true.
Listening to us.
That's true. Unless it's Sam Lagana giving them pointers after he's listened, of course. But yeah, hopefully that will be fixed again this game, and we'll see no more of that. So that wraps up. It wraps up me. It's got me all riled up for the Niners game again. Social media questions. We've only got a couple of questions this time. Richard Offiong from Twitter. Stafford's recent slow starts, interceptions, and will this haunt us come the playoff time? I'm going to have a first stab at this, and I think the interceptions have been a symptom of wider issues. I think Chris has touched on this with the injuries that Stafford is playing through and the the conversation we've already had that Stafford maybe feels the need to carry the team. But, you know, we're winning games despite those interceptions. And I think we can continue that. I think that is something that can be sorted and it will be better next season. But do you think there's any implications there, Chris, for the playoffs?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's definitely going to haunt us. We're getting to the sharp end of the season. We're playing teams who are, you know, proven winners. You know, they're going to have higher win percentages. They're going to have better defenses. They're going to be smarter coaching. And I think I'm worried that it will be exploited. And I think we've seen it before when we played the Niners and Stafford's issues there. The Niners were just relentless. They didn't allow us back in. I think the Ravens were naive. And a better coach would have exploited that, you know, much more than the Ravens did. So, yeah, I think it's a big concern.
Okay. John?
I think the first thing to probably highlight is that this is probably going to be Stafford's first proper, I would say, go at the playoffs. There's always going to be a risk with any quarterback having a slow start when you hit the postseason and whatnot. You know, it is a bit of a worry, but like I said, as the season came on, you know, he's kind of shown that he can bounce back, you know, and he can kind of not let him affect his game. You know, as Chris said earlier on, if that was Jared Goff, you know, he throws a pick, his head goes down. And I still can't believe that there's Rams fans out there that are still of the mindset that Jared Goff is a better quarterback than Matthew Stafford. And, like, I don't believe that for a second anymore. Like I said, as I've been impressed with Stafford has matured and, you know, he's going to be a totally different quarterback next season. But, you know, the Rams wouldn't be anywhere near where we are right now with Goff as our quarterback. So we've got to give Stafford some credit and, you know, and get behind him and believe in him, I'd say. You know, to quote Vermeil, you know, and paraphrase him, we'll rally around Matthew Stafford and play good football.
And, you know, I think this is the opportunity that Matthew Stafford has now with the playoffs, in so much as that with the Detroit Lions, he made the playoffs three times and he was one and done every single time. This is where he can prove himself. And you know, I'm not saying he needs to win the Super Bowl, this team, or even needs to get us to the Super Bowl. But it's the performances within the playoffs, and it needs to be moving us forward, and we need to be competent. And he's got a great opportunity here to actually show that he is a better quarterback and he can take a team through the playoffs. So, I think he has a great opportunity here. So, moving on from that question, there's Paul Monigarty on Twitter wants to move us to the postseason already with a hypothetical trade question. So I hope you guys are ready for this. Would you be happy if the Rams traded Stafford for Trevor Lawrence of the Jags? Given Stafford's streaky nature, would the initial drop-off be too great for a longer-term option, John?
First of all, what are you going to trade Stafford with? Because it's not going to, it wouldn't be a, like, let's talk about hypothetically, right? The back office want to do this. It's not going to be a straight swap. Jags aren't going to take Stafford for Lawrence with nothing. You know, the guy's number one, number one or two, I can't remember what one it was, pick last year. You know, he was going to be their guy. If we hypothetically wanted to take him, then we can't just say, here's Matthew Stafford. The Jags would want something else. Mm-hmm. So we've not really got picks. So, you know, even hypothetically speaking, it couldn't happen because it can't be a straight swap. Maybe down the line when we get picks back, it's something that hypothetically, you know, could be possible. But my personal opinion is I wouldn't want to trade for Lawrence. Not really seen enough of him to say that this, you know, I know he had a great college career and whatnot, and he came out of college highly rated. But whilst they could be a longer term option, you know, I've guessed the same thing was said about, you know, Carson Wentz and Jared Goff. You know, these guys are supposed to be really great quarterbacks. They've both been traded now from the teams that drafted them. You know, Wentz will probably have a decent career, I'd imagine, in the app for the Colts. Whereas Goff will probably, you know, disappear into obscurity over the next season or so. But as I've joked earlier in the season with Lawrence, that each week is a week closer to the Jags drafting their next quarterback. So it's one of those ones. I say that from a point of view, let's see where he would end up and see how his career would develop from there to decide whether or not, you know, down the line that could be an option. Because the question is a good question, because Stafford is that much older that we're not going to have that much longevity out of someone, you know, we had hoped with Goff, who we drafted right out of college, that we thought this guy could be the quarterback to build a franchise around. So I understand the line of questioning, but I don't think at this stage I would say that despite his, you know, his background in college, that Lawrence would be the kind of guy. I would like to see him, you know, I suppose, take a few more hits, a few bumps along the road, you know, kind of develop himself further and show, you know, another team, and not the Jaguars. I'd say I'd like to see him probably traded from the Jags to, you know, kind of maybe get some wins, I guess. But that's, I suppose that's where, with Stafford, despite, you know, how poor the Lions were, you could see there was a diamond in the rough there, and it just needed the right team, which is hopefully us, to then, you know, polish it off. So it's one of those ones, it's early days in terms of Lawrence, but, you know, at this moment in time, you know, I wouldn't even consider, even though I've just spent a couple of minutes talking about it. I was going to say, I'm about to, you know, I'm about to kind of like derail my point. I wouldn't enter any discussions about trading Stafford at this moment in time. I think the guy, he's had a great season, he's settled in well, but I think next year, you know, fingers crossed, he's going to have an even greater season. And as I said all week, I'm still annoyed that he didn't get the nod for the Pro Bowl.
Okay. And I tend to agree. I think Matthew Stafford is our quarterback for 2-3 seasons, and that will probably be where he is with LA, and we'll have to start thinking about where we need to go to next. But I think we've got to stick with Stafford. He can't just be a one season and done. And we haven't got the draft capital to start trading for first round picks again. Chris, any thoughts?
What John said.
Fair enough.
I mean, I think it's a really good question. It makes you think. It really makes you think. And it's interesting, there's Lawrence that was mentioned in the, you know, one of the multiple other dudes who are year two, year three in the league who haven't really broken through yet. Yeah, John's first point was the best one. You know, Stafford and what else? Sam Lagana. Are we going to send Sam to Jacksonville? Because it's going to take a lot more than that to get a guy who has apparently loads of potential but not proven track record.
Sure. Okay. So that just about wraps us up. I've got something else to add, but does anybody else have any other business, Chris?
Yeah, just a wee thing that's been biting at me for the last, probably, it's been growing. It started off as a nibble, and then it was a bite, and now it's a mouthful. As the season has progressed, and we've been talking about Cooper Kupp and his Triple Crown and his receiving records, and, you know, there's always a voice in the background saying, yeah, but if he gets it, it's 17 games and not 16. So, you know, you have to take that into consideration. I'd be interested to hear what you two gents thought about that.
I mean, I'll take that one first as the moderator's privilege. But I think Cooper Kupp mentioned it this week, and he said, you know, there is a difference between a 16-week season and a 17-week season, and he'll always carry that with him. And it's worth noting that, you know, Matthew Stafford is the common denominator in both of those potential seasons. But I agree with you, Chris. You know, it's, you're adding an extra game, which is what, an extra 4% of the season, and, you know, to break a record with you know, an extra game is, it doesn't feel quite right. It doesn't sit quite right, does it?
Well, John, any thoughts from you?
I mean, first of all, I think, you know, it's such a great achievement for Kupp to be now in the top five, you know, and to also take, you know, for a single season, take the team's record for us. I did see him come out with a quote. He said something like, I was, what those guys did in 16 games, it wouldn't seem right to. I don't know for those records to be broken in 17. So I think whilst he's acknowledging what he's doing, he's kind of trying to stay humble about it, not to take anything away from what are, you know, you can't even argue, they are legendary receivers in their own rights. But at the end of the day, you know, is that to say that, you know, when they played less games in a season, that you should discount any records from then? You know, the game's evolving. You know, I have no doubts that, you know, in years to come, there might be 20 games, say, in a season, you know, when they're, you know, they're playing, you know, not even international season, but in an intergalactic series, I guess, on the moon and Mars or whatnot. But so it's like one of those ones, like, Cup has got to go out there. There's 17 weeks he goes out there to do it. You know, his stats, if you want to make that comparison, at 16, they are where it's at, and he deserves all the plaudits for it. And hopefully, you know, for some reason, they'll probably not consider him as MVP, but hopefully he comes out with the Offensive Player of the Year, because he's a phenomenal year. But for me, you know, it's the season as a whole. Doesn't matter how many games it is for me, but that's just my opinion.
Well, I'd like to just highlight some information to the world at large on this, because it's been irritating me. Because I'm a bit of a stat. I used to be a stats. Used to take stats in the British Football League. It's how I first started when I was too young to play seniors. But so I've always been a little bit on the stats. And they used to play 14 games in a season, John, as you alluded to. And they switched over. 1978 was the first time they played 16 games in the season, which coincidentally, the Rams lost to the Cowboys in the NFC Championship game that year. So let's hope that's not an omen. But there was a guy called Charlie Hannigan, who played for Houston, and he's actually got two of the top 35 season performances. And he played 14 games each season. And he, on a per-game basis, would be the number one. So if he'd played 16 games at his average per game, he'd beat Calvin Johnson by 30 yards as the overall highest number of yards in a football season, if it went pro rata. So for all those that detract from Cup saying it's 17 and not 16, I don't see Calvin Johnson, Julio Jones, Jerry Rice, Antonio Brown, Michael Thomas, Marvin Harrison, Antonio Brown, all these guys saying, well, actually, I'm top of the league, but, you know, I'm going to defer to the guys who played 14 games. So just a wee bit of trivia for you.
I'm sure that'll occupy a few minds until the game on Sunday evening. John, do you have anything else to add under any of the business tonight?
Well, just to ask you guys a question, like, that probably quite a few people asking, do you think Cup's going to break it on Sunday? Because looking at it, he's only 4 off of Brown in 4th, 19 off of Jerry Rice in 3rd, and 42 behind Julio Jones in 2nd. So do you think he's going to take Megatron's record, or do you think, as I think more likely, he's probably going to end up 2nd?
I'll take that one first, John. I think he's going to fall just short, unfortunately. But that will still be a phenomenal season for him. Chris?
Yeah, I think the same. I think the Niners are going to key on him because he's too good, he's too useful. And they're going to try and force us to go to others who aren't as proven. And I think the Niners have the personnel and defence to do that and the game plan. So, yeah, I think he'll fall short, which would be a shame, but can't wait for next year, eh?
Yeah. What were your thoughts, John? Did you think he was going to do it?
Yeah, as I said, I think he'll fall short. I can't see him beating 135 yards. Mm-hmm. I think that's what the difference is. I think the 49ers will go out to, you know, contain him, and we'll have to, you know, go elsewhere, which is, I suppose, not a bad thing, because we've got the personnel and we've got the talent to go elsewhere, you know, with Higbee, Beckham and Van Jefferson. But it'll be a shame for him, but, you know, it's been a great season for Cup. And like I said, I hope he's, you know, he gets the plaudits and the awards he deserves at the end for it.
I'm sure he will. I'm sure he will. Certainly from the fans of the Rams anyway. I had one final thing to add under any of the business. And I'm not as much as a stat fiend as Chris, but I do like to look forward to see who else we're playing in coming seasons, because there is a formula where you can see who we're playing and which divisions we're going to play. So we're pretty much nailed on for everybody. The only ambiguity is we will either play New England or Buffalo at home. But because the NFC played 9 away games this 17-game season, that means we will have 9 home games next season. However, the Rams play the Chargers, in theory, as a road game. So we will actually play 10 games next season at SoFi Stadium. Well,
that's good work. Good work, Tony. That's great.
I just couldn't quite work it out because it said SoFi Stadium. And then obviously I had to think about it and think, oh yeah, the renters play there as well, don't they? So yeah, we'll have 10 games in Los Angeles featuring the Rams next season, in the regular season.
You know, the best part about that Chargers game is, despite being a road game, there'll be more Rams fans than Chargers fans there, and we won't even have to try.
There's confidence for you, Chris. John, sorry. So yeah, I just thought it was interesting. So in theory, next season we'll play the Falcons, the Panthers, the Broncos, the Raiders, and the Cowboys at home, as well as the traditional three divisional rivals, and that ambiguity between New England and Buffalo. And then our road games will be the Saints, the Bucks, the Chiefs, the Packers, and the Chargers. So something to think about for next season. So if neither of you have anything else to add, I think it's about time for us to wrap it up.
Taylor, wrap it up.
don't tell Jalen Ramsey though.
Slap.
Right, great to have you on this evening, John. Thanks for coming back again.
Always a pleasure, Tony. Thanks for having me.
And Chris, thanks for dialing in from the further reaches of the world. And it was great to have you back.
It's un placer, as they say in Spain.
Excellent. Great to catch up with you both. Great to talk about some Rams football. And thanks to everybody for listening.